My guest today, Professor Francis Boyle, is a professor of international law and jurisprudence at the University of Illinois at Champaign. He's been in the middle of the blizzard and freezing spell that has struck the Midwest, and we're happy to have him with us again today. Beginning with his receiving of his BA degree from the University of Chicago in 1971, becoming Phi Beta Kappa as a junior and receiving his Doctor of Jurisprudence from Harvard 5 years later, Professor Francis Boyle has led a career in international law over the past several decades that has been as varied as it has been truly extraordinary, and is always guided by a sense of what is just and opposed to what is popular. Among his most major accomplishments was the authorship of the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, which was adopted unanimously by both houses of Congress and signed into law by President George Bush Sr., for whom Professor Boyle would later draft impeachment papers submitted to Congress by Representative Henry Gonzalez over his conduct of the First Gulf War. His most recent book is Destroying Libya and the World Order, the three-decade campaign to terminate the Gaddafi Revolution. I not only invite, I urge listeners after our interview to look up Professor Boyle's biography on the University of Illinois website, and you'll understand why he was my choice for the subject we are going to discuss today, the prospects of international law and for our civil liberties under President Obama in 2014. Welcome once again, Francis Boyle, to Takes on the World.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you very much for having me on, and my best to your listening audience.
The prospects for international law and civil liberties under Obama are not too good. On January 5th, you wrote a provocative piece noting that 2014 marks the centenary of the First World War, and note that the latest eruption, I'm quoting you, of American militarism is akin to that of the American opening the 20th century with the war in Spain and the creation of a colonial empire that stretched from Cuba and Puerto Rico to Guam and the Philippines. So it's evident that you think the prospects of respecting international law on the part of the administration are not, to put it mildly, very good.
You are correct about that, Jeffrey. In fact, Obama was behind me at Harvard Law School, as was his wife. We had some of the same teachers, and I had hoped when he came into office that at least we would see a basic respect for the United States Constitution and principles of international law. But we have not. What we've seen is just a wholesale continuation of the Bush policies that trashed international law, human rights, and the United States Constitution. In fact, Obama is even worse in the sense that he has now authorized and approved, to the extent this could be done, at least factually, the murder of United States citizens in gross violation of the Bill of Rights, and has now murdered at least three United States citizens that we know of. He has also, again, renewed the National Defense Authorization Act that permits the military to pick up anyone they want here in the United States for any reason they want and do whatever they want with him or her, including disappearance or transfer to another state for torture. And we know from Senator Levin's statement that as originally drafted, this would not have applied to United States citizens, and Obama insisted that it apply to United States citizens. He also launched a completely unconstitutional war against Libya that exterminated about 50,000 Libyans and has destroyed Libya as a state. Last September, he came within a hairbreadth of starting a war with Syria that would have drawn in Russia. President Putin had sent a picket line of 10 Russian ships right there off the coast of Syria that could have easily degenerated into World War III. So this man is very dangerous and a serious threat to to the peace of the world, and certainly a dire threat to the United States Constitution and the American people.
Well, certainly he seemed to have been bailed out of the Syrian war by the rejection by the British Parliament, a historic rejection by the British Parliament of David Cameron's call for support of the U.S. in an attack on Syria. And it seems that President Obama, after seeing his democratic action taking place in Parliament, could hardly have gone ahead with an attack on Syria following Britain.
Well, I think we all stood up. It wasn't just the British Parliament, but I think the American people and even Congress made it quite clear we did not want what obviously would have been a catastrophic war against Syria. You'll note Obama pushed through War Powers Resolution authorization for a war against Syria through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It was extremely dangerous. It would have authorized a war also against Russia, China, and Iran, anyone basically assisting Syria or involved with Syria. And yet, over the weekend, all the support for that completely disappeared. The British were very helpful here. But, you know, it was the American people who stood up and Congress and even the Pentagon and told Obama to stand down. And, you know, by the end of that weekend, it was pretty clear he was not going to get his war powers authorization against Syria. But by comparison, he didn't even bother to get war powers authorization with respect to Libya. He just went right ahead and did it of his own accord. Clearly an unconstitutional war that is also impeachable as well. Now we have the dispute between China and Japan over the Diu Senkaku Islands, which Japan stole from China in their Imperial War of 1895. It's clear these islands are Chinese. And yet, after World War II, instead of returning them to China, the United States put them under the administrative control of Japan. And now the United States, under Obama, pursuant to his policy of pivot towards Asia, is encouraging and enabling Japanese militarists, who are the direct descendants of the Japanese war criminals who gave us World War II, to dig in their heels on this matter. Both the previous Secretary of State Clinton and current Secretary of Defense Hagel have said that these little bitty rocks that Japan stole from China are subject to the applicability of the U.S.-Japan self-defense treaty. And if there are hostilities between China and Japan over them, and by the way, there was just another incident yesterday, we would be obliged to come to the defense of Japan to, I guess, defend their illegal gains from 1895. So it's a very dangerous situation. Likewise, if you read the U.S.-Japan self-defense treaty, it's made very clear that only Congress can declare war against China, not the president, not the Secretary of Defense, not the Secretary of State. And yet it appears they're going to go right ahead anyway if there is a conflict here and go to war against China, which could be catastrophic. So it's a very dangerous situation now over there in the East China Sea. As you know, because you follow the Middle East, it's a dangerous situation there as well. Syria has been effectively destroyed as a state. Lebanon is being destroyed as a state. Iraq has been destroyed as a state. So it's a very unstable and dangerous situation all around, and directly attributable to Obama and the people he has around him. I doubt very seriously, you know, Obama knew anything at all about international relations when he went in there. His specialty was civil rights, which he did teach at the University of Chicago Law School. But he's just doing whatever he's being told to do here, both in the Middle East and in Asia. It's very dangerous, Jeffrey.
I wanted to actually mention that the Japanese Constitution, which was written after the war, was written to make sure that Japan would never be a militaristic power in the region. But Yoshio Abe, the new Prime Minister of Japan, wants to change that constitution. And the United States really would like to do that as well, to have Japan do that as well. So Japan would become another military power backed with U.S. weaponry, obviously.
Well, in fact, Abe is de facto changing the Showa Constitution, the peace constitution. He is acting as if it is a nullity. He is currently rearming. And we have to put this in historical context here, Jeffrey. After World War II, the United States did make an effort to denazify Germany. Now, of course, as we both know, it was haphazard and incomplete for a variety of reasons, including the outbreak of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. But, you know, I've spent time in Germany, and it seems to me most people in Germany of our generation have gotten the message. In Japan, which was under the sole control of the United States as the military occupation power, we made no equivalent effort to denazify Japan. So we have militarists today, the next generation of militarists in power, running this government, and we are enabling them and facilitating these highly aggressive policies that they are taking towards China that could result in hostilities where our leaders have illegally and mistakenly said that we are obligated to come to Japan's defense. It's completely preposterous, but extremely dangerous. Fortunately, the deal with Syria appears to have diminished the dangers there for the immediate time. And likewise, this interim arrangement with Iran appears to have diminished the dangers there for the time being. But I think if you look at it in a broader perspective, Obama and his people have decided to quiet down Syria and Iran now to concentrate their efforts, activities, attention on this pivot toward Asia that is designed to directly confront and challenge China right there in its own backyard. It would be like Russia or China coming over here and challenging us in the Gulf of Mexico. Of course, we wouldn't put up with that.
It's interesting how there is so little debate or questioning when the president talks about making a pivot toward Asia and establishing or reinforcing the American presence in the Pacific, as if this is the American's world to decide what it can and cannot do, and the rules apply to the United States do not apply to other countries. You're right. You can imagine a Chinese warship in international waters off the coast of San Francisco or Los Angeles would raise all kinds of hackles on Capitol Hill, but there is no debate, even with there's no actually any movement in this country at the present time opposing U.S. policy in the Middle East or, in fact, anywhere else.
You look at the mainstream news media, Jeffrey, basically they're supporting Japan. As Chomsky pointed out, manufacturing consent for war. I'm afraid, what's going on here, right? But go ahead, continue.
Well, I was going to mention, it's interesting, the going back to the Syrian situation, where the public, there was discussion about the potential possibility of going to war attacking Syria, and the American people across the political spectrum made their opinions known to their members of Congress that they did not want to do this. And when AIPAC made a rare public decision, or a decision to go publicly in supporting a U.S. attack on Syria, it was too late for these members of Congress, who have to face their voters, to then go against their commitments they made against the war. But earlier, the situation with Iran, in which Obama, as you mentioned, is trying to quiet that situation down, and he asked for members of Congress, the Senate and the House, both he and Kerry plead with him not to add new sanctions. AIPAC, following the lead of Benjamin Netanyahu, said full steam ahead with the sanctions, and immediately 26 members of Congress, the Senate, the AIPAC style, half Democrats, half Republicans, put through a resolution that would actually call for the U.S., among other things, to go to war on the side of Israel if Netanyahu decided to attack Iran. And now, as of this morning, there are 50 signatures. Half the members of the Senate have signed on to this resolution, as reported in this morning's Jerusalem Post. There's not a word in the American media about this going on.
No, of course not. I mean, as you know, the mainstream news media is worthless. It just covers foreign affairs, defense, even civil rights, civil liberties, pretty much the way whatever government is in power wants it to cover it, whether it was Bush Jr. Or Obama. As for these AIPAC-sponsored resolutions, sure, the American people know full well we have the best Congress that money can pay for. And in America, you get what you pay for. Congress is bought and paid for by AIPAC, ABDL, and the Zionist lobby here in America. So, of course, you get these resolutions. But you know, you've been up against AIPAC and ADL yourself, Jeffrey. You don't have to. I don't have to lecture you about that. I seem to recall I helped you out on your lawsuit years ago. So. Gave you some support on that.
Appreciated. It was appreciated too. You know, I want to get back actually to the Libyan situation, because what that opened up was literally a Pandora's box. Immediately we saw what happened in Mali with fighters who had left Libya, what they call jihadists, extremists, whatever, have gone into Africa. And others have gone into Syria, and the weapon stashes that were in Syria after the Gaddafi government was overthrown, they've ended up in Syria. I mean, we've seen the destabilization of the region. We look at Iraq. The United States crimes in Iraq, which were not begun by Obama but begun by Bush, we pretend that this is not our fault, that these are, we stirred up this Shia Sunni struggle that is stretching across the entire region. And you, as you say, you wrote early, you talked about the stretching into the Pacific and back in 100 years ago. But we have a destabilized situation which could lead to a third world war 100 years after the first one started.
That's correct. If you look across the board, indeed, I apply the analysis of my teacher, Hans Morgenthau, at the University of Chicago in his classic work, Politics Among Nations, where he talks about unlimited imperialism, citing examples of Rome, Alexander the Great, Napoleon, and Hitler. And my argument is, taking Morgenthau's concept of unlimited imperialism, that's exactly what the United States has set out to do after 9/11, 2001, using that as the enabler, the pretext to do so. And we've targeted all the oil, natural gas, and their transshipment points we can, hence the war against Libya. We've destroyed Iraq as a state deliberately. The same is being done to Syria, Lebanon. You know, the list of these things goes on, and as Morgenthau did point out, unfortunately, it does not end very well for unlimited imperialists. And my concern is that unless Obama and the government here, whoever might take Obama's place, Romney would have been just as bad. Indeed, Romney and I were classmates together at Harvard Law School. We took all of our first-year courses together. He would have been just as bad as Obama. Unless we stop these people, I'm afraid somewhere they are going to set off World War III. Again, we came very close on Syria. Likewise, Bush Jr., gave the green light to Saakashvili in Georgia to attack South Ossetia, and in the process killed Russian troops that were there. And Putin did respond, whereupon they cut away Saakashvili. But that was a serious confrontation point there. Bush Jr. Threatened World War III publicly against Russia over Iran after President Putin had visited there and said he didn't believe Iran had nuclear weapons. Likewise, his U.N. ambassador, Khalilzad, the neocon, also publicly threatened World War III. Putin has said that the deployment of U.S. ABMs in Eastern Europe and right around the borders of Russia could constitute a Cuban Missile Crisis in reverse. And they have now deployed Russia tactical nuclear weapons to Kaliningrad. And Obama is simply continuing to move forward with the deployment of these ABMs that are clearly part of an offensive first strike strategic nuclear weapons system to be used against both Russia and China. He is surrounding China as well with ABM systems, and he is literally rattling the tiger's cage over there in the East China Sea, using Japan as our cat's paw. So I'm not sure we're going to have to get organized to try to stop this because, you know, if you study the origins of World War One, or this is a catastrophe waiting to happen, and anything could go wrong here in their calculations about how far they could go, and especially over there in the East China Sea in the confrontation between China and Japan. They came within a hairbreadth of provoking a war with North Korea over the islands there, right off their coast. The Pentagon went on war footing. I went to bed figuring there was going to be war the next morning. China sat on North Korea saying, do not respond to their provocations. So we've had several flashpoints and war scares already. And again, reminiscent of the outbreak of World War One, and then to some extent, like reminiscent of what happened in the late 1930s, where you had, you know, Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, Tojo, and the people there threatening war and invading countries. So it does not look very good at all. And we're in the thick of things. We're encouraging it, enabling it, and moving it forward under Obama and before that under Bush Jr.
Would it, is it really in the end make any difference, given our system and our history, who is the president and whether it's a Democrat or Republican?
Well, you know, Tweedledum versus Tweedledee, Democrats versus Republicans. As I said, Obama was after me at Harvard Law School. Romney was my classmate, indeed my section mate. We took all of our first-year courses together. There's no real material difference between Romney and Obama in terms of substantive policies on anything that I am aware of, except that, Obama, I think, is the black velvet glove covering the white iron fist of U.S. imperialism and capitalism. So that's why he won and Romney lost. Obama presents a better figure to the rest of the world. And here at home in the United States, if Bush were doing these things, that the trashing of the Constitution, even Bush did not go so far as to assert the authority to murder United States citizens, nor did he go along with the something like the National Defense Authorization Act. So I don't think Democrats or Republicans here, I see very little difference between them. I've been a political independent all my life. Obama and Romney, we went through the same program there at Harvard, how to train elites to run the empire, to run the world, to control and dominate America itself. It's the same thing, the same people. As for Obama and his people, these are all the sons and the daughters of the best and the brightest, a la Halberstam, that gave us the Vietnam War in the Democratic Party. Halberstam tells the story. John Kennedy won the election, and he recruits the best and the brightest from Harvard to give us the Vietnam War. So Obama, a product of Harvard and Columbia, recruited the best and the brightest from Harvard, Columbia, Yale. And they're still running things. They've learned absolutely nothing at all from the Vietnam War.
One difference is when there's a Republican in office, there's a protest movement. I mean, the one against Lyndon Johnson carried over from the Nixon administration, but when Clinton was president, there was nothing. Everyone who was so-called a movement type worked for Clinton and apologized for Clinton, still do. Despite his record, and
Clinton invaded or attacked at least six different countries, so and he should have been impeached for any one or all of them. But there you go; you're right about that.
You had prepared the impeachment papers for Bush Sr., which Henry Gonzalez introduced, but it didn't take off. But he at least introduced it, and last September you were preparing. You were looking for a member of Congress to sign impeachment papers for President Obama, but this Congress seems to be even more, lacking in spine than the one was back in 1991.
That's correct. As for the late, great Congressman Gonzalez, to his credit, however, in his memoirs, Bush Sr. admitted that the reason he stopped and did not go all the way to Baghdad was that he feared impeachment. So Congressman Gonzalez, I think, did have an impact there. I think, one of the reasons Obama might have pulled back on Syria was that the Republicans control the House, and they can introduce a bill of impeachment if they want to. And they very well could have if he had gone to war. It was clear he was not going to get approval by the Republican-controlled House of Representatives for a war against Syria. Based on my experience also trying to impeach Bush Jr., John Conyers, the ranking House Judiciary Committee member, that has jurisdiction over any bills of impeachment, convened an emergency meeting of all his top advisors on March 13, 2003, just before the start of the war against Iraq, to debate impeaching Bush and Cheney, at least, to try to head off that war. And he had on the table my draft bill of impeachment against Bush Jr. that was modeled on my bill of impeachment that I did for Congressman Gonzalez, and he invited in Ramsey Clark and me to argue the case for impeachment against Bush Jr. Well, after a two-hour debate, basically Ramsey, with all these top Democratic Party honchos and advisors, they did nothing. Nothing at all. Indeed, John Podesta, who Obama just appointed as a senior advisor at the White House, came in there and said he was appearing on behalf of the Democratic National Committee, and they felt a bill of impeachment might hurt whoever their presidential nominee might be in 2004. Well, you know, that was just baloney. In March of 2003, no one had any idea who their candidate might or might not be in 2004. It was clear that the Democratic Party supported the Bush Jr. war against Iraq. That became very clear to me and Clark at the end of that two-hour debate. Indeed, the only people in this room with 40 or 50 top Dem advisors who supported impeachment were Congressman Conyers, Ramsey, and me. That was it. So, you know, the notion that the Democrats are the good guys here is preposterous. You and I knew that growing up during the Vietnam War, when it was started by Kennedy and then expanded by Johnson. The Democrats were not the good guys then, and they certainly aren't today.
My guest is Francis Boyle, and we're talking about international law under Obama. It's quite clear when the Democrats took over Congress and they had a Democratic Senate and Democratic Congress that impeachment, Nancy Pelosi, who was the Speaker of the House, then said will not be on the table. And even any discussion or investigation into the Iraq War, even the Brits, with their parliamentary system, had an investigation and debate about Britain's role in the Iraq War. And even the papers still blast Tony Blair for his involvement. But in this country, it was simply off the table. So the Democrats, as you say, have collaborated with the committee. Well, one quick question.
And by the way, let me say sure. That the Democratic leadership, like Pelosi and the rest of them, they knew full well about all the Bush spying policies against the American people. As we now know, they finally admitted it when it came out. They said, well, you know, it was all subject to classification, so we couldn't talk about it. Baloney. The United States Constitution clearly has in there what is called the Speech and Debate Clause, which means any member of Congress in the House and the Senate can get up on the floor of the House or the Senate and say anything he or she wants to do with absolutely no consequences at all. Congressman Gonzalez did this in our campaign to impeach Bush Sr. In his capacity as chair of the House Banking Committee, he had come up with all sorts of classified information about related to Bush Sr.'s role in the BCCI scandal. That was basically a front organization for the CIA. And he would appear on the floor of the House and read this into the congressional record. And it was classified. Bush Sr., you know, ranted and raved, but he really could not do anything to Congressman Gonzalez. Likewise, the Pentagon Papers. Senator Gravel read them into the congressional record, despite the fact they were supposed to all be classified. So we cannot accept statements by Pelosi or Boxer, you're out there, or any other leaders saying, well, we can't tell you, the American people, what's going on because the information is classified. This is a democracy. We have a right to this information. If it is classified, they can get up on the floor of the House or the Senate and tell us. They cannot hold a press conference. That is not privileged. But they can tell us what's going on, and they didn't because they supported it. Pelosi and Boxer have supported all of this since you're out there. and the others, the Gang of Eight on the intelligence committees, they knew full well. They knew full well about all the torture and the waterboarding and everything else, and they just would not tell us. And they could have constitutionally told us simply by getting up on the floor of the House or the Senate and level with the American people, both under Bush Jr. and Obama, and they have refused to do so. So I'm saying here, we can't let any of them off the hook with this argument about classified information. That's just preposterous.
One quick question, because we're coming to the end of a interesting, a very enlightening discussion. What do you think of the impact of Edward Snowden's revelations, and also the revelation that appeared in the New York Times, even with the video, about this group of people who in 1971 decided to break into the FBI headquarters in Pennsylvania? What impact do you think this is going to have?
Well, first let me say that Snowden is a hero. He acted to uphold and support and defend the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution that requires a warrant on the basis of probable cause of criminal activity before the government can engage in any type of search or seizure. There is no way Snowden could ever get a fair trial here in America. I say that as a lawyer who's done, you know, criminal defense work for many years. So, of course, that this cannot happen. The demand that he come home and face justice, he'd get a kangaroo court and a life sentence. But the man is a hero. Those who have attacked him, I note this professor Jeff Stone up at the University of Chicago Law School has called him a traitor. Well, it just shows you how right-wing and reactionary the University of Chicago Law School really is. I was there as an undergrad. That whole institution is right-wing and reactionary. So these revelations have been very important, I think, to explain to the American people that the NSA is spying on everything we do with no authorization from a regular United States federal district court. This so-called FISA court is a kangaroo court with a rubber stamp. It is a disgrace that any United States Article III judge would sit on the FISA court and gut and destroy the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. These judges who do that should be impeached, in my opinion. Someone should be putting in bills of impeachment against these FISA judges.
And Francis, on that, I certainly support that position. We've come to the end of the hour. I want to thank you, Francis Boyle, for being our guest today. Please go online and Google Francis Boyle and further your education, listeners. It has been great talking with you again, Francis. Have best wishes for a healthy and productive new year.
Well, thanks, Jeffrey, and keep up the struggle out there.
Okay.
Solidarity from here.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.